Back when we were doing all Zoom meetings, she gave us an Angus's figures that we thoroughly enjoyed. So anyway, we're looking forward. We finally got here tonight, so we're looking forward to having one. Okay, Linda, it's all yours.
Hi, everyone. My name is Linda, alcoholic. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to see you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Linda, alcoholic. Thank you, Billy. My sobriety date is June 2nd, 1999. It almost feels like I'm in the meeting with you guys. I mean, I know I am, but it feels like I'm there in the room. I'm June 2nd, 1999. My sponsor's name is Sharon C. My home group is Pacific Group, and I'm here to share with you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And I started drinking really, really young. I was about 11 and a half years old. And I grew up in this big family, a big extended family. And I had a lot of family parties at my grandparents' house. And it was so much fun. When I saw them drinking as a wee girl, I thought, I want to do that. I want to be like my aunts and my uncles. And my grandfather would play the guitar. My uncle would play the drums. My Aunt Linda would sing. And it was a big party. And this was at a baptism. You know what I mean? We just drank. They drank and drank and drank. Weddings, baptisms, funerals, you name it. Easter, Christmas, anytime, anything was reason. Any reason was a reason to have a party. So I didn't think anything was bad about drinking. Except for my one uncle. They nicknamed him Judge because he didn't look like a judge. He always went before the judge, so that he was nicknamed Uncle Judge. That was the only bad thing about the drinking, I think. But I didn't really see him too often because he was always on vacation, as my grandmother would say. So drinking to me looked attractive. I had a couple of aunts. They were a few years older than me. And we walked down to the park. It was summer. I was 11. They put makeup on me. My hair was really high. It was the 80s. They sprayed Aquanet. And my aunt said, don't smoke because we'll catch on fire, as they were putting my hairspray on. And I had red lipstick. And I thought, oh my God, this is going to be so great. So we walked down to the park and we had one six pack of Budweiser beer. And I had one drink and one can of beer, and I really liked it. I don't know why I liked it so much, but I was hiccuping and burping and laughing. I could feel like I just wanted to finally breathe, kind of relax, and just be in the moment, be in the present moment, which was something I never could do as a kid until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, actually. And that's a long time coming. I drank for 17 and a half years. That first round of drinking didn't have any real consequences, except I got super drunk. I threw up half in the car, half out of the car when the car was moving. It splashed in my hair. And I was like, oh my God, this is so fun. I had so much fun. And I asked my Aunt Becky, can I go out with you guys again? And she said, yes, just make sure you don't tell grandma. And so I didn't tell my grandmother. I didn't breathe a word of it. I kept that secret and I did go out with them. I used to spend summers at my grandmother's house for two weeks out of the summer. And that's where I began my drinking. It was fun. Nothing really too bad happened, except I think I lied and said my name was Sarah and I was 16 to some boys that we met, and they had more alcohol. So I didn't want them to feel bad that I was so young. It's probably like jail for them now. they'd probably get arrested if they were found out. But I just had so much fun. So that's my very first time drinking. And then I went home and then I couldn't drink anymore because it's really hard to get alcohol as a 12-year-old now. And my grades started to plummet. I started drinking on weekends. I would sneak out of the house. It got so bad that my parents put like security bars, but back then I was really super skinny. So I would just sneak out and suck in my stomach and squeeze out of the window. And I would take my clothes and my curling iron and just go have fun. And I just wanted to hitchhike up and down the major highway where I lived. And guys would pick me up and they'd say, do you want a party, kid? And I'd say, yeah. It was so easy to get into my life back then. So so finally, I grew up in this alcoholic home and there were things going on in that house that never should have happened to a little girl. That doesn't make me alcoholic, but what it did do for my drinking, it helped to push all that stuff down. So I would just shove all those feelings, those experiences, those nightmares, I would shove them all down with alcohol, like vodka tonics, screwdrivers, rum and coke, rum and diet coke, Tanqueray gin. I don't know if there are any Tanqueray gin guys and girls here, but I love Tanqueray gin. I never had whiskey or scotch. I don't know. I didn't really like the, I don't know why. I kind of was sad that I didn't get to try them. I mean, I'm not sad anymore, but when I first got to AA, I thought, oh no, I'm never going to be able to drink whiskey or scotch. And my sponsor's like, it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's not that good. And so I was just drinking and drinking. And then I finally ran away. Alcohol, and I only know this by looking back from doing my 12 steps and doing the fourth step. Looking back, alcohol gave me so much courage. It gave me so much courage to like run away for good. Can you imagine your 13-year-old daughter just running away for good, never ever coming back, not telling you where you are or where your daughter is, not calling, not anything, just disappeared. My mom knew that I ran away, but she didn't know where. And I tell you, I looking back would be horrified if my child did that, but I didn't think anything of it. Alcohol gave me so much courage, fake courage. I got myself into a lot of scrapes and I always made it out okay. And I just thought I was being tough. Like I thought I was a tough chick, tough street girl. And I wasn't, I really wasn't. It was, I had a drink. I had to take another drink and another drink and another drink. And I would get out of a scrape and go, God, I think I need another drink. And I'm like 13 years old going on 14. I should have been home like playing softball with my friends or going into eighth grade and ninth grade. So I ran away for good. And then the cops came and they tried to take me back and I wouldn't go back. And it was just a mess. And I had just, this is when it was working. I just started drinking. I didn't get to Alcoholics Anonymous for another 17 years. Oh my God. So it just went on and on like that. And I was hitchhiking and I would just get so drunk. I started to go into blackouts. And I thought, I called it like losing time. Like, oh, I just lost track of time. Until I got to AA, they're like, no, Linda, that's blackouts. I was like, I've been having those for a long time. And they're like, oh my God. But I lose track of time. And I woke up one day and I was like 14 years old and I was living with the drug dealer. And I was like, how did this happen? Well, it happened because I was hitchhiking and he said, hey kid, you want to party? And I said, yes. And I jumped into his car and moved right in. My drinking went on like this for a while until something happened. And the something that happened was I got pregnant at 15. And I put the drink down. I try to clean up my act. I enrolled into school, night school, because they don't let back then they didn't let pregnant girls go to high school. I enrolled in night school. I went back to my mother's house. I got in a lot of trouble, so much trouble. It was overwhelming, so much trouble. There was like a superior court case and I needed a drink, but I couldn't drink because I was pregnant. So I believe the only reason why I didn't take a drink is because my alcoholism wasn't as progressed and I didn't have, the craving wasn't like driving me to drink as much as it did later after he was born. My son was born and I was back in the park drinking with some guys 2 weeks after he was born. I mean, I literally went to the hospital, came home and then was back out drinking. And I couldn't figure out why. My mom would say, why do you have to drink so much? I said, Mom, I don't drink that much. I only drink like twice during the week. And then on the weekends, that's like 4 days out of seven. and I'm 15. I can't even buy it. She's like, she didn't know what to do with me. She didn't know anything about alcoholism and neither did I. Had this little baby. So I moved around a lot and we kind of grew up together. And my son would always say, oh no, mommy's sick. Mommy's sick. And I'd say, yeah, mommy's sick. And I was always hungover. And when I look back on it, the only thing, I don't wish to shut the door on it because I can use those experiences to help other women, but I sure wish I had that time back sometimes. I wish I could have been there for my son a little more. I did get a better job. I moved to a better house. I moved to a better town. I wasn't dating as violent guys as I was. I had been dating before. His father was out of our life for good when my son was, before he was even born. So I've been a single mom for a long time. And I kept thinking in my mind where the illness is centered that if I got a better job and I moved to a safer town, that I would be okay. And that actually did happen. And I started to make a lot of money to me, a lot more money than I ever thought, because I come from, you know, being homeless and sleeping in the park and eating out of a trash can. So I thought I was getting better. But I always kept drinking. So when I would get a promotion, I would drink. And I never got fired. I never got arrested, not because I shouldn't have. I don't know. I just never did. I remember getting pulled over a couple of times, but I did not get arrested. what happened for me is I went drinking and dancing one night, and this is when the drinking started to like not be so great. I was trying to control it, and I had made a commitment. We made a commitment. We were only going to have two drinks on a Tuesday night, and that was it. We were only going to have two. And when I had my second one, this guy had bought me the drink and he set it down. And I'm like, he was a stranger. And then I started to fall off the bar stool. And I was like, oh my God, he's the one, because he caught me. He caught me real good. And then he propped me back up. And I thought, oh my God, this is great. And I had all like leftover money from him buying my drinks. And my friends were really concerned. They're like, what, where are you going? Well, he had drugged me and took me, basically kidnapped me out of this restaurant bar place. And I remember thinking in my mind, I'm so scared. I was so scared. And I couldn't move any body parts. Like I was incapacitated. I could only move my eyes, and they were darting back and forth. And I bet when my friends were at the door, because they tried to chase us and he had gotten me in the car and was taking off in my car before they could catch us. And I remember thinking as we were driving away and looking at them, they probably think I'm willingly leaving with this guy because I'm not putting up a fight. I'm not trying to jump out of the car, but I really wanted to jump out of the car, you guys. I really didn't want to go down like that. I'd been in scary experiences before, but I always could get out, and this time I couldn't. And when I came to out of a blackout, I was in this bathroom, basically like fighting for my life. And I don't know what I said to make him so mad, but he was so mad that he punched me in the face here. And then it was lights out. And all I really wanted to do was have two drinks on a Tuesday night with my friends. That's what I was thinking when I left the house that night. And when I came to the next morning, it was apparent what had happened to me. And I was beat up pretty bad. I was surprised that I was still alive. And then when he actually let me go, when he released me, I wanted to run to my car, but I played it really cool because I thought if I take off running, he might not let me go. So I pretended like everything was okay. And he gave me the keys back to my car. And I remember driving home and I thought, you know, I can't keep doing this. I can't keep living like this. That was so scary. And I was shaking and crying. And when I got home, the first thing I did was I made sure the door was locked and nobody was following me. And I looked in the mirror and I could see all the bruises already starting to form around my eye and my neck and my forehead and just the bruises everywhere. It felt like a truck hit me. And what did I do? The first thing after all that, I went to the refrigerator and got a drink. I got a big fat glass of wine. I drank it down, and then I called the babysitter and I lied to the babysitter. She's like, oh my God, I was so worried about you. I said, oh, I'm fine. I just overdrank and I couldn't remember, you know, what time I told you I was going to bring, pick up the baby and blah, blah. I was a liar. I didn't tell her the truth. And I didn't want anybody to know. So I kept that a secret for a long time. But the girls that I went out with, they did call me on it. They wanted to know what happened. And I told them the truth. And they said it was my fault because I accepted a drink from that guy. And so from that moment on, I just started lying about my drinking. I never told if anything else bad happened. I just kept it to myself, and I would drink and drink. I didn't drink because honestly, bad stuff happens whether we're alcoholic or not. But my experience is I drink more and more because I have a progressive illness that wants me to continue to drink. I have a spiritual malady that tells me I'm no good. So what's the point? And keep on drinking. This is how we're going to get through it, Linda. I'm your friend. I'm your best friend. You can count on me. And that's how my drinking went. It wasn't bad every time I went out drinking and dancing. There was this other time I went drinking and dancing and I won $500 in a dance contest. That was a lot of money. I didn't know I was in the dance contest because I was in a blackout. But when I came to, I had all this cash. I was like, wow, I need to come here more often. And my friends are like, oh my God, you were dancing on the bar. I'm like, I was. And they're like, yeah, it was so great. You knew all the words to the song. I'm like, oh my, I couldn't remember a thing. I'm like, that's right, I did. I mean, I think it was YMCA. How hard is that? You know, YMCA. So that was one good night. I did not get sober probably for another, I don't know, 6 or 8 years after that. I mean, it just seems like for like a lifetime. I got sober when I was 28 going on 29. I felt so old. And I got a better job. I'm going to get sober. I got a better job and I met this coworker guy. He was very nice. And we were just roommates. And I'm like, oh my God, thank God we're just roommates, because I would never go out with you. And he's like, yeah, yeah. And then a few months later, when we were getting married, I'm like, how did this happen? And I just kept drinking. And my mom was like, you can't drink before the ceremony, because we need you to walk down, down the aisle. And I was like, don't worry, mom, I got this. I got this. I remember getting in the dressing room thinking, do you ever have those like really smart thoughts and think, I probably ought not do this, and then do it anyway? That's what I did. I'm like, I'll deal with it later. And then off I went and I drank the night away. And that's what happened. I just kept drinking. He had a couple of kids. I had one. And again, my poor son walked all through this with me. God bless his heart. The end came after that marriage. I stopped drinking after I got married, because my drinking got really bad and I thought it was his fault. It wasn't. It was just progressive illness. And I would go to Las Vegas and get really drunk and say my name is Sarah. And then there was one time, this is the last time I drank. Being in the hot seat makes you sweat. In a car with a pimp. Oh God, I can't believe I have to tell you guys this. But anyway, that's what happened. I didn't know. As that happens in AA, sometimes you just don't know. When you're drinking and dancing, you don't know. But the hat with the feather, that and a fur coat, that was kind of a telltale sign. And I remember he asked me, he looked me in the eye and he's like, Sarah, are you sure you want to do this? I'm like, yes, I want to party. And he got out of the car, and there I am in a car with a stranger again. And I thought, oh my God, this is not good. So I was already hearing voices, and this voice actually had something important, valuable to say. And it said, Linda, get out of the car and run. And it felt like divine intervention for me, but it felt like something grabbed my collar and was yanking me out of the car. And I went running. I was probably like half skipping, but I was about 45 pounds heavier. I was bloated. I had drank all day. I passed out at the hotel pool. Security had to kick me out. I had drank Tanqueray gin, the big handle one. Almost all the way to the bottom. I probably had alcohol poisoning. I thought that he was chasing me. He wasn't. Nobody was behind me. He was probably glad I got out of his car. And that was the end. I was so tired of the lies and the cheating and the being sick and throwing up bile and the shakes and the bloated and the not eating and feeling like doomsday was coming. It's like that part in the big book where Bill said he was afraid to cross the street, that he'd get hit by a delivery truck. I'm paraphrasing that sentence, but that's how I felt. Like any moment I'm going to be taken out. I'm starting to have nightmares and panic attacks and wake up in the middle of the night and go get a drink, sneak down the house, down the stairs in the house while my children and my husband were sleeping, and I would go get a drink. I flew home in and out of a blackout. Called that husband and I said, the girl stole my money and left me in Las Vegas. He's like, you have the worst friend. I go, I know, they are terrible. I'm never going anywhere with them. He believed me, or so I thought. I flew home. He met me at the LAX airport, and that was the end. I thought that this is it. I'm done. I can't tell him who I've been hanging out with and what I've been doing. I'm a married woman. And I really thought getting married would make me good. Like I'd behave. My mom said so. And it wasn't true. I could not stop drinking. Thinking of this makes me want to cry. I can't believe I live like this, but that was my life. So my solution was, when I got to my car, I was just going to crash the car into the pillar on the freeway, on the 405 freeway. It's a big freeway here in LA. And I was just going to head on into the oncoming traffic. And when I went to go do it, my husband was following me, the husband at the time. And I chickened out, like, oh, I can't do it in front of them. And so I drove all the way home. The kids were at the door, mommy, mommy. And I felt so sick, physically, mentally, spiritually, all of it. I came into alcoholics. I crawled into alcoholics. I felt like this big when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was just dying. And I was only 20, going to be 29 years old. And that was the end, literally the end of my old life. Thank God that Linda died. that day. Thank God, or else I wouldn't be here. My child would not have a mother. I wouldn't have 22 years of an amazing, incredible way of life that I never knew was possible. I didn't know that I had an illness. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I was ignorant. I just kept trying to be good and not drink and only drink on Fridays until Sundays. And then why would I drink on a Thursday night after like T-ball practice? What is wrong with me? Why am I like the soccer mom with the solo cup, the red cup with orange juice and vodka at 8 o'clock in the morning at soccer practice? What's wrong with me? And I met this gal. Her name was Tamara. She was really nice and she was super clean. I thought she's so shiny. She must take a shower every day because I wasn't taking showers. And she was an ANA. And I thought, what is this ANA? And she's like, oh, we don't drink no matter what. I have 3 years of sobriety. I go to work and I stay there the whole 8 hours. I was so impressed. I was like, wow. She called this lady every day a sponsor lady. She called her every day. She had sobriety sisters. I go, ugh, gross. Why do you have to talk to them? And she's like, Linda, it's so, my life is so much better, but I don't drink at all. I can't. I asked her to go have one beer with me. And she's like, oh, no, I can't have one because one is too many and 1,000 is not enough. I was like, what kind of hell math is that? You are weird. I don't think I can trust you. Like, oh yes, you can, because I don't like, I won't sleep with your husband. I'm like, I don't even want to sleep with my husband. You can. So that's the kind of talk that we were talking about in this class we were in. So I called her because she's the only person in my life that I actually knew that didn't drink and seemed happy about it. And I called her, I told her what happened with the pimp in Las Vegas and how I didn't tell her about the crashing the car into the pillar. I thought I'd save that for later. And I told her about the pimp in Las Vegas. She's like, oh my gosh, that happens all the time in AA. You're going to fit right in. And I thought, really? I am? She's like, yeah. And she was right. Like there's like 3 or 4 of us at my home group. We all have that experience. It's so fantastic. And this is the only place where I actually feel like really welcome and really like I feel a part of. So I called her and she said, can you not drink today? And I'm like, I don't know about that. She's like, would you be willing to not drink today? And I said, yeah, sure. But I was still tipsy from the night before. So I didn't really feel like it. And I was hungover and throwing up. But by 5 o'clock, you bet I wanted to drink because that was prime time drinking time. Anytime it was time to make dinner and for those kids and that husband, I needed a drink. And I was pacing the floor at 5 o'clock and I didn't drink. That was the first miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. Probably the second. The first one was I actually called this chick that I didn't really even know or like. And the second one is that she picked up and then she said, don't drink today. Would you be willing to not do that? And then I didn't drink. And I had just gone to Costco before that big warehouse store. I had big bottles. Like I was stocked up. I was ready to go. And I had vodka in the freezer and I didn't, I just looked at it. I don't know if you're like me, but did you ever just like look at, oh, yep, my vodka's still there. And I go off. Oh, the wine is still in its rack. Okay, good. Like, so weird. When I got sober, my husband was still a drinker at the time. And I would dust the bottles. Like, he would not drink the alcohol. I guess it was all mine. I thought it was for our friends. But I would go dust them. I'm like, oh, one day maybe I'll be. And like, my sponsor's like, stop dusting the wine bottles. Stop. And then I climbed up. He had hid the vodka because I was really like, I love vodka. And then he hid it behind in the top shelf. And I remember like it was yesterday, this was 20 something years ago, behind this stuff in the very top of the kitchen. And I climbed up there one day at 60 days sober and I had to sniff it. And I was like, yep, still smells like vodka. And my sponsor's like, no, we don't sniff alcohol anymore. We don't sniff alcohol in AA. I'm like, we don't? I thought we just don't drink. I didn't know we couldn't sniff. It's like, no, we don't sniff. We don't dust, we don't, nothing. You don't drink it, you don't eat it, you don't touch it. I didn't know. I was like, oh, okay, I won't sniff it anymore. But that's how close I got to drink it. I was so close. It's like a miracle. It had to be a miracle, whatever you want to call a miracle. But one happened for me. Tamara's like, can you, I know I'm bouncing all around because I'm so excited and I'm so passionate about AA. But yeah, you guys saved my life. One of my sponsors called me a walking dead woman when I was newer. She's like, you're a walking dead woman. I'm like, why? It's like, you're just not getting it. You have a fatal illness. I'm like, I'll be fine. Like, I didn't want to go to a meeting and I didn't want to set up chairs, something really stupid like that. She's like, you're not going to make it. I'm like, yes, I will. I was so ignorant. I just didn't know how close I got to not. I know now. That's why I'm like so grateful. Hands on my knee, like on my hands and knees, grateful. Like, somebody asked me to speak, and if there's nothing on the calendar, I say yes. A sponsee calls in the middle of the night. Ah, I have to answer it. You know, because that's what people did for me when I got to AA. I started going to women's meetings for a week. And I didn't even like women, but they were so nice to me. And I would cry. I would just burst out crying in meetings all the time. Imagine, it's so shocking. I know, because I'm so well composed these days. But yes, I cried all the time. And my nickname was Crybaby Linda. I didn't know they gave me that nickname. I didn't know. They were so funny. They were so, and I love that because we laughed so much. I'm like, I don't know what it is, but I keep shaking. They're like, oh yeah, that happens. I'm like, okay. And then everybody smoked at the time. So I started trying to smoke. And I told this one lady, Shirley, she's like, I said, Shirley, I'm trying to smoke, but then I get the shakes and I feel like I'm going to throw up and I get this really bad, like vibrating headache. And she's like, just keep smoking, smoke your way through that and it'll go away. And I thought, okay. So I tried. I was never really a smoker. So I gave her all my cigarettes and she was pretty happy. And what else did they tell me? They told me, come with us to coffee. And like one time they didn't invite me to coffee and I was all upset because I wasn't invited. And so when they did invite me, I said, no, I mean, I was so crazy. I was so cuckoo and I was crying all the time. And this one really nice lady named Rebecca, she said, Linda, it's okay to cry. All things need water to grow. And I thought, oh, wow, I'm growing. Okay. And, you think that was bad. Then I had to go do the 12 steps. Oh boy, that was a tall order. And I did them the best I could in my first year. I had meetings. I was going to, I was doing my commitments. I would go to my sponsor's house and we would do some steps. And my husband at the time, I think I got 6 months and then, or maybe 9 months. And I was getting closer and closer to I was inching to my year. And my husband at the time said, I'm not happy. I liked you better when you were drinking. I want my old life back and I want my old wife back. And I went and I told my sponsor, I'm like, oh no, I can't be in AA anymore because he doesn't like me anymore. And she said, we sure are going to miss him. And she started laughing, but it's true. We ended up getting divorced. Not till after my first year, but I'm so glad she said that. She's like, I'm sure I'm going to miss that guy. And, but I get it. Cause I almost didn't make it. Cause I thought that, you know, I thought maybe he would help me stay sober and he didn't want that. He had other plans for us. And I don't know, maybe he didn't really believe I was a real alcoholic, but I knew it was important for me to know. What ended up happening is, I got a year sober. Things started to turn around in my life. I was back on my feet. I got a little job. I got my own place. I was raising my son. My son is 35 years old now. He's just a wonderful man. God, he's an excellent, excellent man. And it's not because of me, because remember who I am. I'm a pregnant teenager, high school dropout, living in the par beating of a trash can kind of a girl. And Alcoholics Anonymous, people say this all the time, and I used to roll my eyes like, oh, I'm a product of AA. I really am. I really am. The experiences I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous has made me a better woman, the best person I could ever be in the eyes of my higher power and of Alcoholics Anonymous. I take my job here in AA very seriously, but we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun. I got to make amends to my son. I got to make amends to my ex-husband and my two stepchildren and even my dog, Jaeger. I made amends to her too, because I was very neglectful of Jaeger, Jaeger girl. And, you know, and things got a little better as time went on. Nothing happened overnight, and I'm grateful. The only thing that, here's how fast Alcoholics Anonymous worked. I called one lady and I didn't drink. And then I go to AA and I stay sober for a whole year. I could not even put a drink down for 30 days. One time I was on this Oprah Winfrey diet and I put the drink down for 28 days trying to live my best life. I think Oprah was my first sponsor. I used to watch her every day at 3 o'clock. And they said, if you don't drink alcohol, you'll lose weight faster. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try that. So I tried it. And the 28th day, somebody passed a drink my way. And it wasn't even my drink. It was my friend Joni's. And I slammed it. I just drank it. I was so thirsty. And they're like, what are you doing? You're on a diet. I'm like, oh, I forgot. I really forgot. And that's what's true about the big book, where we forget, you know. I couldn't remember with sufficient force the suffering and the memory of the suffering a week ago or a month ago. So did the 12 steps, ended up getting separated and divorced. And then now I'm almost going to be 2 years sober. And I have a different sponsor. We go through the steps again, but something's still missing. 2.5 years. I'm making more money than I ever had. I bought a house. I had 2 cars, and one was a convertible. My son had a car. I was traveling because I'd never gone anywhere or done anything. And I was traveling to like Hawaii and New York and having all kinds of fun. And I was dating a lot, and I wanted to die, but I was still going to 7 meetings a week. I had 7 commitments. I had a couple of sponsees. We were all crazy together. I hadn't done the 12 steps all the way through the big book, like it's asked us to do, the suggestions to do. And I was suffering while sober. And then those panic attacks started coming back in the middle of the night. I would wake up in terror and frustration and despair and bewilderment. The hideous four horsemen were like, hello, we're here. And I'd go, oh my God, it's 3 a.m. It's 4 a.m. I'm so tired. And I would go to the meeting early, and I would stay late. I'd help clean up. I was even a secretary of a big meeting, like 200 people. That's what I thought was big. And I know what was wrong with me. And I thought, well, I might as well just end it because I'm not going to make it. I guess I'm just doing this whole A&A thing wrong. And I met a kind lady in the power of a higher power. I believe I call it God, spoke through this woman, Pamela, and Pamela saved my life. You know, she showed me the truth about my alcoholism, that I'm powerless, and that I will always pick up a drink no matter what, no matter how good my life is. I will always pick up a drink unless I have a spiritual experience, an entire psychic change to overcome it. Unless I have that. I didn't have it. I thought I had it. I didn't have it. She said, where I was at in my sobriety was that I put the drink down, I put the men down, I put the shopping down, I put the food down, I put all these things I was using instead of God in the 12 steps, and I was sitting on the train tracks, and the train is still coming, and the train is untreated alcoholism while sober, and it's going to come and run me over, and that'll be the end of me. And she said, you do all these 12 steps out of the big book all the way through without stopping, you'll have a spiritual experience. And if you don't want to, just let me know, because I want to get insurance on you so I can collect. I thought, oh my God, I thought you were nice. She was not nice. She was from Texas. She was mean. She was really nice, but she was mean. But she offered to take me all the way through. And I went to her house every Tuesday at 3 o'clock. I felt worse when I left her house. She asked me not to date that whole time during the 12 steps. She asked me not to buy anything anymore. She asked me not to go anywhere, sleep with anyone, use a credit card, not to eat. Overeat, undereat, overeat, whatever the hell I was doing. Let's just stay still long enough to save your life. God, she's so dramatic. I'm not that bad. I have 2.5 years of sobriety. I'm a secretary of a meeting. I'm not that bad. She's like, you are that bad. And you can't even hide it. And then she asked me the really hard question. She said, are you going to kill yourself? I said, yep, I am. And she said, do you have a gun? Nope, but I'm going to do something else. She's like, oh, you have a plan. She was a really strong, smart sponsor. She knew how tricky alcoholism is and how powerful it is, because I have everything to live for. And I just don't want to even be here. Then she asked me, it's funny now. She said, can you not kill yourself until after the third step? I said, yeah, I can do that. That sounds reasonable. And I remember looking at my watch. I'm like, how long will that take? Because I need comfort and ease now. And she said, God works faster than alcohol. I thought, how can that be? No one's ever said that. She's like, oh yeah, try it. Next time you feel like killing yourself, or you want to take a drink, or you want to sleep with a guy, get on your knees and ask God to remove the obsession and see how fast it happens. So I tried it one night. And it worked. had to stay down there until it was safe to get up, but it actually worked really quick. I'd never knew that. I'd never done that. I'd never gone to God immediately when that feeling came, like, let's go do something. Let's go get in trouble, whatever it is. And I felt like it was driven. I was driven. And then I got on my knees and asked God for help. And that was one of the very first experiences I had with a power greater than myself that kept me still enough, long enough for that feeling to pass. What ended up happening is I got through all the 12 steps with Pamela, and she just told me the truth. And I got to pick a power greater than myself, one that I could really fall in love with, one that I could really trust. And that's what I'm here to say today, is that what I learned was so simple: trust God, clean house, and work with others through the 12 steps of AA. Chokes me up, my primary purpose. Excuse me. Chokes me up. My primary purpose is to stay sober and help another alcohol. Right. The water person dropped the ball today. Water person. Sorry. At my home group, we have a speaker water host, and obviously they're not here today. Sorry. We were doing the third step, and she forced me to pick out a power greater than myself. She made me sit still long enough to pick out a power greater than myself. I said, Pamela, there's no way. There's not a higher power that can help me, because I know it works for all of you guys. I was agnostic. I know a higher power can work for all of you guys, but you don't know my story. I mean, you kind of know my story. I go, but you don't know, like, it's too late. I'm too far gone. I'm no good. I'm terrible. Like, I don't get the thing. Like, I get to just not drink no matter what. I don't get to have the real good thing like you have. She's like, oh yeah, that's just an old idea in your mind. And where's the illness center? I go, in the mind. And she's like, yeah. So why are you listening to your mind? I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, that's why you need a higher power. So she had me sit down and write one. And at the time it was friendly, strong, safe energy. That was the higher power. I'm like, I guess I can go with that. She's like, really? Is that a good, strong one? I'm like, yes, let's go with that one. And I remember we were praying on our knees at the top of this hill behind her house. She lived on a hill. It was beautiful. All the trees were blowing in the wind. And it seemed like a really big deal to give my will and my life over to a care of God as I understood him. It was like a really big deal. I got scared. Got really scared. And she's like, This is not surgery. This is a spiritual experience. It's okay. Just do it. I was so scared. And she's like, don't you think a power greater than yourself will do a better job than you? I mean, look at your time, look at your experiences while drinking and sober. And I thought, oh, she's kind of right there. And so this big hawk flew by, and she's like, that's a sign. That's a sign from your higher power. Let's say the prayer. I was like, no, that's not good enough. I was so, I was balking. And so we were still sitting there on our knees, and it seemed very serious. She's like, God, this is Linda. She put her arm around me, and she's willing to give her life and her will back over to you. And I just felt my shoulders go down, and I took a deep breath, and this white butterfly flew by. And I said the prayer. I'm like, that's the sign. And I said the prayer. And I really felt the presence of a higher power come in and just sit right here. And it stayed. It never left. I don't have to take a drink. I don't have to do any drugs. I don't have to sleep around. I don't have to spend money. I don't have to try to feel better with cake and food and nothing. I could just be myself with the higher power. We went on to do all the rest of the 12 steps. I got to make all those secrets come up and out, and I got to share and got them all off my chest. I got to make all my amends, all 122 or 132. I can't remember. I was $68,000 in debt at that time. The IRS wants their money. Who knew? I'm like, I'm rich. She's like, no, you're not. That's the IRS money. I had gotten engaged to like a millionaire guy that I didn't even like, but it had a big diamond ring. And I told her, I'll just sell the diamond ring and pay off all my debt. She's like, nope, you're going to give the ring back. This sponsor is crazy. She wants me to trust God and not the diamond ring. She's nuts. Like, she don't know what's up. She's never dated. She doesn't know how to handle things. She doesn't come from the streets that you take from one and then sell stuff and then pay the other. She doesn't know. But something inside me said, you did a third step. Now you can't go back. Like, you belong to God in AA now. And if you really trust God, you'll give the ring back. unless you want to drink and die. And then remember to tell me if you're going to do that so I can put an insurance. I'm like, okay. No more insurance talk, please. No more insurance talk. I'll do it. I gave the ring back to the guy. He couldn't believe it. And he said, none of the girls ever gave me the ring back. You're the only one. I'm like, geez, how many women did you know? She's like, whew, you dodged that bullet. I paid the IRS back. They had a whole department. They're like, hello, we'll transfer you to so-and-so. I'm like, hi, I'm Linda. I'm an A&A. I'm doing a ninth step. And they're like, oh, it's so great to hear from you. Like, they were happy to hear from me. Turns out I didn't owe them lots of money. I owed them like $111 a month. So we made these friendly credit terms. It's really easy. I mean, I could spend that like in the... Anyway, cleaned all that up. I got to make face-to-face amends to my mom, and years of resentment just got washed away. She listened to my whole amends, and we were so close. She got to have 21 years with me sober. I got to have 21 years with her sober. My sons had a real mother, a sober mom, for 22 years. I got to meet and marry the love of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did a sane and sound sex ideal for the future relationship, so I no longer attracted the cuckoo cray cray rich guys that were wanting to like control me. And I was such a needy girl. I'm like, give me the money, you know. I got to be in real relationships with real people doing God's will. I got laid off from work. My best friend killed herself at 18 years of sobriety. I broke up with a boyfriend. Now I'm backtracking. This is in 2011. I got to see that my program works in any and all situations. I got laid off, broke up with the boyfriend, had to move. My best friend killed herself. There was one other thing too, I can't remember. And I had to get a new job. Like, those five major things all happened in 2 months in April of 2011. And I thought, why do we do all this work, you know? And my sponsor said, we go through this so that we can learn to trust and rely upon God. You cannot trust and rely upon people, Linda. They're just people. And they're less than the higher power. So go to your higher power and he'll show you through. It was a dark, dark time. Right around that time too, my son came home from the Iraq war. He's a war veteran. It was just touch and go. I didn't think I would drink, but I was kind of feeling lost. So I'd ask God for signs, and I ended up finding a little sales job. And and my experiences having gone through the 12 steps and getting that entire psychic change, I know that I have a higher power. I know there's a higher power that works in my life. And I remember being so scared of when my son was in Iraq in an active war. I thought, oh my God, if something happens to him, will I be able to get through that? And what came back was he'll be with his higher power, whether he comes home to me in this, our town, or he goes back home to God. Either way, he's going to be with the higher power. That gave me comfort. I put my son in the palm of a higher power's hands. I did a third step on my son and I felt okay. And when he came home, Alcoholics Anonymous had rallied around us. I got on the plane and I got to see him file down this big stadium and everybody was clapping and hooting and hollering for our boys and girls when they walked. All those soldiers came walking in and I got to be a sober mom through all that. That's one of the best experiences I've had in AA. What it's like now is that I take girls to the women through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I ask them to do everything that I do. And if they don't, then they get to find someone else to work with them. Because I don't feel good not giving everything away to the women that I sponsor. If anything should happen to them, if they should drink and die, I don't ever want to feel like, oh, I didn't tell her about this. I didn't ask her not to do this I didn't leave anything out. I know I gave them everything. Sometimes I think I take things a little too serious, but you know, that's what I thought about my sponsor and that's okay. I can take it. I can be the bad guy because I'm trying to save their life. And they're like, but I want to go bowling with this cute guy. I'm like, I'm trying to save your life and you want to go bowling? No, I would encourage you not to. I married my best friend in AA. I met him doing while I was doing my AA commitment. He's sober up going on 11 years, I think. I'm 22 years. We got married 8 years ago. We tried to start a family. I was pregnant with twin girls. I miscarried those girls at 5.5 months of sobriety. And I thought, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get through this. I didn't feel like drinking, but I sure felt overwhelming grief. Like it felt like it was grief and untreated alcoholism mixed together. And I was concerned that what if it is just alcoholism? And what if it's using this situation to get me to go drink? And when it was happening in the hotel, I always say the hotel, it wasn't a hotel, it was a hospital. When it happened in the hospital, it was clear that we named them Madeline McKenna. It was clear that the girls weren't going to make it. And I asked the doctors to save them and not me. And they said, well, we can't do that. We can't do that. Your family needs you. And so I guess they were too little and they didn't make it. And but I remember my husband and I were so, there's a part in the big book that says we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. And all that came to us is that we immediately started praying in the room. And this power over that came over us was like everything in the room just went quiet. And I felt the presence of God there. I know it sounds crazy, but there's all these machines going up. I had wires and oxygen and like people were crowded all around me. There's like 8 or 9 specialists and doctors in the room. And then the babies came out and they're trying to save the babies. And I was like, no, we have to pray. And we prayed. Everything got, it was so quiet. You could hear a pin drop that the doctor got startled. Like, ma'am, are you okay? And I said, yeah, we're just praying. Cause like my heartbeat like dropped, my blood pressure dropped. And that's the higher power. That's what I've been trained and taught to do. It's been drilled in my head. When you don't know what to do, you go to God. Drop to your knees right now, right here. Ask the higher power to give you strength to walk through it. And the strength came in. And the higher power never fails me. Never, if I'm going to the higher power. The next day, I opened up the blinds to our hospital room, and there was a big rainbow. And that was in July. That was in July of 2015, in the middle of the summer. It never rains in California, not LA where I live. In Santa Monica, it never rains. And that night, I guess it rained. And there's this beautiful, beautiful rainbow. And I thought, okay, higher power, I see. The girls are with you. And I felt a sense of peace. Now, that doesn't say I didn't have grief and I didn't want to get out of bed and I didn't want to go to meetings, because I didn't. But what happened for me is that we got through it. And I remember thinking, we'll have joy again. And, you know, 4 years later, we ended up adopting a little boy and he's sleeping in the other room. And his name is Matthew. And he is a gift from God. He's 2 years now. I almost said he's 2 years sober. He actually is 2 years sober, but he doesn't take cakes. He's 2 years old. And we got to be with the birth mother. And it was like we got to have a do-over. We got to have a new experience in the labor and delivery room. But this time we have a little boy, you know. It's just amazing. Amazing. And if I hadn't stayed sober through all that, this little boy wouldn't have us as parents. And I remember asking the birth mother, hey, why did you pick us? Because they sent her, like, this adoption agency sent her like 60 profiles. And she picked us. And she's like, I don't know, I just felt love from you guys. And I thought, that's Alcoholics Anonymous, for a stranger to give the most selfless act, to give their child over to me. And you heard my story, you guys. You heard my story. And so what it's like today after COVID and the crazy stuff that's going on is that I still trust God and clean house and work with others. And I do AA first. And all the rest of my life falls into the place. I have to have alignment with my higher power. I feel in alignment ever since I've gotten sober through the 12 steps. Of course, the first 2.5 years were kind of sketchy. But since the spiritual experience, the higher powers never failed me. I haven't always gotten my way, but it always worked out. What it's like today is that two weeks ago, my son was in Afghanistan. My oldest son was stuck at the airport. And I remember we just went into prayer on the phone. He was working at the embassy in security. He's not enlisted anymore. But his company provides security for the diplomats and all the diplomats and all the people that work there. And he's like, Mom, I'm pretty shaken up. And I just don't know what's going to happen. We don't have any backup here. It's not like when I was in the war and there was lots of backup. There's nobody here. They're supposed to be on their way. And I remember I said, let's just pray. And we prayed and he hung up. And by the following Monday, he was able to get back to Texas. He lives in Texas. He was able to get back to the States. And you know, I never lost my faith. I never lose my faith. It's hard. This COVID thing is hard. I know you guys know. My mom died on on Mother's Day last year. It's hard, but I get to just share any experiences with that. And I miss my mom a lot, but we have great joy at the same time. You know, we got to see my mother-in-law yesterday, and she's 83, and she got to play with her grandson. She didn't get to see him for his whole first year. So there's lots of joy. I just took a girl through step three, and she got to have a new experience with a new higher power. She never knew. She never knew about the higher power. She just didn't know, like I didn't. I got to see my other friend speak last night at an in-person meeting, and it was really wonderful to be there with her after everything she's been through. And when we stand and sit in meetings today, there's something greater at work for me. It feels even more, ever more important to stay unified and not let things on the outside take away from the things that we have here on the inside, which is sobriety, trust, faith, helpfulness, love, kindness, tolerance, patience. And we laugh a lot. I remember I told my sponsor, you know, what's going to happen to me if I do all these 12 steps and I make all these amends? What's going to happen? She's like, oh, you're just going to be happy, joyous, and free. She's like, don't you read the promises? I was like, I get to have the promises? She's like, oh, yeah, you'll have serenity. You'll know peace. Yeah, it's going to be great. Hang in there. Hang in there, kid. And she was right. She never steered me wrong. She did not lie. I get to have those promises. So thanks for letting me share. Thank you so much, Billy, for inviting me out tonight. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Linda.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll do the closing. We're a little off balance here with doing this. Linda, thank you again so much for a wonderful talk and a wonderful job you did. Very touched as always. It's awesome. Let's see. Sam's going to get a basket. So while that basket's going around, just to remind everybody again, we have speaker CDs and past speakers over on the table. We've got literature at cost. We've got benefits over there for free. Are there any AA announcements for good? Yes,
yeah. Yeah, I just want to say there's flyers for the Labor Day picnic over there. There's just a few there. So if you don't know how to get there, there's directions on there, and it tells you who the speaker is, Frank, I forget the official, and there it is, so there.
Thank you, Gear. Got David out from Norfolk. Let's see, what else, any other announcements? Yes.
Got a chip tonight.
Oh, do we? Kim, is your anniversary tonight?
It is. Actually, yesterday.
Oh, okay, awesome. Yeah, you're 44?
43.
43 years.